is John Gultig. I'll be your guide through this tape. The tape deals with three key questions. Firstly, what is learning? Secondly, is there a difference between everyday learning and school learning? And third, how should we teach to enable learning? The tape consists of interviews with learning experts and teachers, and also includes excerpts from classrooms. The speakers make two points that are important to your study as well. They are, one, we learn best when we are active, when we read, we think, and we do things. And two, learning is tough. There will be many moments when you'll hate doing it. But don't take shortcuts. Listen to the ideas presented on the tape. Read the learning guide and reader to deepen your understanding of these ideas. Do the activities related to the tape excerpts. The learning guide will often suggest you re-listen to an excerpt. This isn't a mistake. You will probably notice that when you do re-listen, you understand the same idea in new and exciting ways. To begin, we'd like you to listen to this learning dialogue. It is a simulation of an exchange that took place hundreds of years ago between a famous teacher called Socrates and someone struggling to learn geometry. Listen to it a couple of times. Work out why the boy makes the mistake he does. And think of how you would address the problem that Socrates faces.
Tell me this. You say that must double the length of the two sides of the square in order to double the space in the square.
Yeah, it must be.
Okay, listen carefully. To double the length of the side, the horizontal side, we must add as much to it again on the side, isn't it?
Of course.
Okay. Then we must obviously do the same on the vertical side. We must add the length of the original side to the vertical.
Yes, that is doubling the length of the side.
Now, according to you, we will have doubled the space of the square from 4 to 8 square feet.
Yes, that makes sense.
Okay, let's test it out. Can you see that you can place 4 of the old squares in the new space? Each of them is equal to the one we began with, the 4 square feet space.
Yes.
Well, how big is the new one? Isn't it 4 times as big as the old one?
Yeah, it is.
Is that what you wanted to do? Didn't you say that by doubling the side you double the area? Is 4 times the old one the same as double the old one?
It is not, I suppose.
Okay. To go back to our initial problem then. If you double both sides of a square, do you double its area?
No, you make it 4 times as big.
Part 1. What is learning?
I spoke to Ian Mull, the editor of this module, and Sandy Lazarus, an adult educator and educational psychologist at the University of the Western Cape, and asked them to tell us what they thought learning was and how they thought learners learnt.
Learning is a struggle in many senses, and one of the ideas about learning in your local forms of knowledge is that it's comfortable and therefore it will motivate. Now, the perspective that I would want to argue from says, no, sorry, learning is hard work, learning is difficult, very often learning is scary. One has to accept, though, that anxiety and even fear in some situations are a real part of learning. And that's because what learning should be doing, if it's working properly, is to actually confront people with new ways of knowing, new systems of knowledge, new, more abstracted, more generalized ways of knowing.
I think that learning is hard work if you consider that we learn something out of a dynamic of conflict in a way which is uncomfortable, because we become aware that there's a need to move and it's an uncomfortable position and there's anxiety and fears and things that go with that. And then there's hard work emotionally in dealing with that and cognitively in being able to move into a new way of understanding things. But I would certainly not separate that hard work from the fun part, because I think that it's a challenge. If the learner experiences that process as a challenge, and we are touching the real passions and needs of the learner in that process, and that's where the everyday experience I think is really important. If we connect with that and they feel it and they feel the need to learn this for their own survival or for their own enjoyment of life, then I think you're putting fun and hard work together. And particularly if you change that word hard work and tough and those kinds of words to the word challenge. My experience of all ages, young people and people at university and in adult education contexts, is that the most valued learning experiences that people will say has been hard work but was fun too, have been where they've been really challenged, where you've met the need, where you've touched the heart, and you've touched the everyday experience, and they can see the link with their needs and their passions in order to meet some demand in the world.
You've got to do both. You've got to have spontaneous forms of knowing. And of course, everybody has those. I mean, when children go to school, we can take it for granted, in a sense, that they do. But they don't necessarily have the systematized forms of knowledge. So the argument is really that those are what need to be developed at school, in and of themselves. And once the child has a new way of knowing within that system, she can go back to the spontaneous concepts and re-understand them, re-evaluate them, question them. Schooling can become very dry and abstracted and removed from our lives if it doesn't engage with the spontaneous. On the other hand, if there is only spontaneous learning, one never ever questions the familiar. One never ever steps outside of the taken for granted and starts to understand that there might be other ways of knowing, other points of view, other systems that are critical of our own ways of being. And we'll never have that kind of learning, which is very rich and very expanding.
So learning is both about content recall and conceptual understanding. Jill Adler, a maths educator, explains what we mean by a concept and what conceptual learning entails.
Learning involves a range of things. Some learning requires that we have to understand the meaning of something, which means we have to probe into it, and that meaning will change as we learn more about the idea. If we take something in mathematics like a variable, when we first introduce students to it, they can only have a limited view of what it is, and that gets stronger and stronger. Other parts of learning is that you actually do have to memorize some things. If you're going to be successful in something like mathematics, you have to get some things, what I say, is under your belt, so that when you're trying to solve the problem, you don't have to attend to them. So I think we also have to understand learning as involving a range of things.
What do you understand by a concept as opposed to a piece of information or content or skill?
Multiplication is a concept. Being able to multiply 3 by 2 is a skill. We can put out 3 lots of 2 and we can get 6. Okay. Multiplication as a concept is quite a bit more difficult because it's got a range of meanings. So it is about groups of things. 3 groups of 2. Okay. It's also about area. It's also about proportioning out. So a third of a half gives us a sixth of what we had. And so that concept has to grow as you move through the school. And some of the aspects of the concept of multiplication change as your number system changes. Okay, so when you've only got positive numbers and you're multiplying, you always get bigger if they're positive whole numbers. And that's the first experience that the kids have. Okay, so in the primary school, the kids' experience of multiplication is that it does make bigger. So to try to pretend that that's not what happens is also a problem. So you have high school teachers saying, oh, I wish the primary school teachers wouldn't teach them that multiplication makes bigger. And my argument with that is that they don't have to teach it. That's what they see. That's what they experience. It does make bigger. We have to expand and reorganize that concept when we get into fractions and when we get into negative numbers. And then we get into more abstracted forms of multiplication, as has developed in mathematics. And we have to help them understand that we now move into realms that you can't see. How do you see -2 times -3? Okay, it's within the realm of mathematics. You can see a fraction of a fraction. Okay, you can see 2 divided by 1/2 and 1/2 divided by 3 if you use halves. But when you've got negative numbers coming in, it becomes much more complicated. And very small, 0.2, 0.346 multiplied by 0.47. Kids find those very hard, but you have to work on those mathematically. I mean, a concept is at a much more generalized level, and it's always linked to other concepts, and so concepts are understood through language.
Jill suggested that learning involves a range of things. What are these different kinds of learning? And are some kinds of learning more difficult than others? I asked Ronnie Miller, a University of Natal-based psychologist, to explain.
It is fair to say that there are some kinds of things that do seem to be acquired and that do seem to be learned without a lot of difficulty. So one needs to focus in on where does the difficulty come. We can talk about content learning, and we can distinguish perhaps between what we can call understanding, or if you like, conceptual learning. One of the examples that I often like to use is a game. There's a difference between learning the rules of a game, of different games, and the concept of a game. The conceptual understanding is that a game is an activity that has rules. Now, if you understand that, then it's pretty safe that if you're going to learn a new game, all that you've got to learn are what the new rules are. That's where I'm trying to draw the distinction between some things that it's fairly safe to assume that the learning is a matter of patience and trial and error, experience, and so on. It seems reasonable to think that it's much more difficult to explain to someone a new concept, someone who's never before encountered a game, and you now have to explain what a game is. Now you can also see how difficult that would be, because if you just do it, if you like, as a thought experiment, you can't rely on any of the concepts that someone who understands what a game is has accessible to them. They have to explain something that's completely unfamiliar. Now, how do you do that? That presents, I think, the problem. There's very often an assumption in learning that something new to be learnt, that you start with a blank slate. And I think it's a hugely problematic way of thinking about it. But having said that, I do think that it's tacitly kind of understood. Teacher walks into the lecture theatre or into the classroom, today we're going to do this. And it's as if everything's wiped out. And instead of realizing that that never happens, there is no blank slate, that the minute the teacher starts engaging, some form of understanding is being applied by the learner. That application of understanding in order to engage with the teacher can, in fact, be blocking the new understanding. What we have to see is that what some people call pre-understandings, right? Whatever it is that we apply in order to make sense. We're always making sense. This Piaget called that assimilation. In order to engage, we have to make sense. So we sense-making machines, if you like. So we're constantly making sense. And when what we have to be aware of is that the sense that we're making, if it's not the right kind of sense, then it's actually blocking the emergence of the. That links to the fact of learners who very often say, I'll try and try and try. I've really tried hard, but I don't understand. Now, there's a sense in which the harder the learner tries, the less likely they're likely to understand. Because what does it mean when a learner says, I'm trying very hard? What could it mean? Yeah. And we have a picture of someone sitting, puzzling, you know, holding their head in their hands and really trying to understand something. What it means is that they're applying some understanding. They're using the resources that they have, whatever those mental resources are. But if they're inappropriate, then the actual use of them, the more and the harder they use the inappropriate understandings, the more the new understanding is blocked. So there has to be a letting go of the old understanding. There is a kind of taken for granted, certainly among teachers, approach to learning, and that is that good learning always proceeds from the familiar to the unfamiliar, from what is known to the unknown. But if you think about that, that's a very problematic assumption. And this is precisely what I've been trying to get at, because the real difficulty in understanding is when there is no known to proceed from. That presents the extreme case. It's what people like Piaget called truly novel understanding, where you don't have any concepts that you can take for granted. Now, you can push that further, because most teaching occurs by means of communication. And everybody knows that fundamental to communication is common understanding. The only way you can communicate is if you share a common understanding. So how on earth can you communicate new understanding when the shared understanding isn't there? The usual thing that happens when you teach the learner says, I don't understand. All that you can really do is to repeat in a different way. You can try and be clearer if you like, or you can try and use examples or analogies. But what you can't do is to rely on the very common understanding that is necessary for the communication to be successful. So what very often happens, the learner says, I don't understand, the teacher repeats it. The learner may have the courage again to say, I still don't understand, but invariably, and teachers experience this, the next step is for the learner to say, no, well, now they do understand, when it's patently clear to the teacher, just look in the eyes, they actually don't understand. But it now becomes embarrassing to prolong the interchange. That's the one scenario. The other one, of course, is misunderstanding, and that is when you think you understand, but in fact, your understanding isn't adequate. If we're talking about content learning, what I'm choosing to call content learning, then it's obviously a very good strategy. Go back to the example. If you want to teach someone chess and they know how to play draughts, well, clearly you can proceed from the familiar. You know, here's a board, and you know that the idea behind board games is that pieces move around, and the way they move is governed by rules. So use all the familiar understandings that the learner already has, and you simply add or you exchange one kind of set of rules for another. And a great deal of learning is that. Let's also not misunderstand. A lot of what children have to learn is really that kind of learning. But behind that kind of learning always sits an understanding. And that's where I think the critical edge comes. And that's, of course, where I think children, where things can go very badly wrong, where there's some new understanding. If it's always relied on a familiar understanding, where did it ever come from? And I also think that very often teachers, all of us, can fall into the trap of thinking we're using a familiar. There's a great danger of misunderstanding. When you use a familiar understanding, which isn't really adequate, it can induce misunderstanding. So now that just sets up the problem. I mean, what do you do about it? Let's reverse it. If indeed you can't always start from the familiar, for all the reasons that I've said, because logically there's a problem. By the way, that problem's got a name called the learning paradox. That's all that the learning paradox actually refers to. It's just that chain of argument. That communication is based on shared understanding. The problem, very often, in acquiring new understanding is the absence of shared understanding. So how on earth can you use communication to achieve it? Well, if you can't talk understanding into people's heads, what option is there?
That's interesting. Ronnie, it seems, suggests that the experience we bring to class, our familiar, often blocks new learning. Does that mean we can't use what learners know, in other words, their familiar world, in order to build new and deeper conceptual understanding? And if so, how do we move learners from the known to the unknown?